Thanks so much for listening. Before I get into the episode, I wanted to thank today's podcast sponsor, which is Coda Luna and their baby keepsake castle. I personally just put all of my baby's memorabilia into these little keepsake castle boxes, and they are so adorable, functional, and if you really love organization, then you're really going to love this keepsake box. So not only is it a keepsake box, but it also includes a baby book, and it has space for capturing all of the milestones of your baby's early years. And then the keepsake box itself stores all of the memorabilia that you want to keep. So baby's first socks and pacifier and the little hat that they wore when they came home from the hospital. So this keepsake castle with the baby memory book is more than just an organizational product. It's a gateway to preserving the remarkable journey of new parenthood. So take a moment to visit keepsakecastle.com today and embark on creating a lasting legacy of love and nostalgia. Hi, Marissa. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. How are you, Amanda?
I'm good. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on, and Hello, lovely listeners.
Well, before we get into our topic today more in depth, I would love it if you could give listeners a little bit of information about you and how you got into the work that you do.
Yeah, it's quite a juicy story, and I love hearing about other people's stories, how they get involved and their why. Well, my name's Marissa Mignoni. I was born and raised in San Luis Obispo County of California. Since I can remember, I have loved babies and birth. When I was about 8 years old, I would watch this show on the TLC show program called A Birth Story. And I just knew I would work with birth. I knew that it could be better. I knew some things were missing. And I was on my way to nursing school, but I really only wanted to be a labor and delivery nurse. And someone told me, like, I don't know if you can just start in that position. So that was helpful to hear. And I was 22 years old, and I was feeling really lost and very uninspired with school and what I was doing. That is when I went to Burning Man for the first time. And I saw all these really amazing, magical people doing what they loved and making money at it. So I came home and I dropped out of college. And a very dear friend of mine was pregnant at the time. And she said, "Do you know what a doula is? You would be such a great doula." She kind of shined the light on me, saw me. This was in 2012. So it was before doulas were well known and popular, you know? And I said, "No, I have no idea what that is." So I went home and I Googled it, and that was it. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. So since then, the journey has been just incredible. I found Birthing From Within, which is where you and I ultimately connected. And I did their mentor program, their doula program. And then I quickly fell in love with yoga and became prenatal yoga certified with Jane Austen in San Francisco. That was in 2015. After that, I did level 2 with her as well. And since then, I've also just done a lot of continuing education and continuing inspiration. I've been doing this birth work for 10 years now. So you can really feel like you're on your own island, completely isolated, just like parents feel probably. So it took a lot of community building and really a lot of that oomph within me to keep going, and to get that extra inspiration and education. So I also did some spinning babies workshops, birth story listening with Pam England, birthing from within retreats. I love the word retreat because I'm like, oh no, this is like a crash course immersion program. It's not really retreating.
Sure.
And I just recently, a few years ago, became a postpartum doula with, and I just did another program called Sacred Window Studies. It's an Ayurvedic postpartum caregiver program. Hmm. So I've just been immersed in birth work for 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. I love that. I feel like that your story is very familiar from what I've heard from a lot of birth workers. And I'm like, I wonder, like, does everybody that grows up watching a birth story on TLC, do they all become birth workers? Like, is that the thing? Is that the thread? Wow. Because that was me too. I was like, this is so weird. Like, until I was in my 20s, I was watching that show in the mornings, like before I left for work. I'd get ready and just like watch birth stories. I was like, oh, my husband, my boyfriend at the time, who's my husband now, he was like, yeah, it's kind of weird.
Right.
I'm like, no, I don't have any interest in having my own kids right now, but just fascinated.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people say, I have no idea how you do what you do. And I feel like if we experience that during childhood, then we're obviously meant to work with it. It's not just because it's, you know, working for yourself or feminine empowerment or women's work. It's like actually working with intensity in that way.
Yeah.
So that's really neat. Yeah. I love that common thread. Makes a lot of sense.
I know. It's kind of funny. So another thing that is, I don't know if it's a common thread, but another thing that comes up a lot is, or like a pairing, a common pairing, I'll call it, is prenatal yoga and birth work. And we were having a conversation before we actually started recording about the difference of prenatal yoga and just, in quotes, just doing yoga while you're pregnant. Like it's a different subset of things. Like it involves birth work. It's not simply doing yoga in a way that you can modify certain positions for your pregnant body. That is an aspect of it, but it is so much more than that. And I am such a huge fan of prenatal yoga and prenatal yoga instructors. So before we really dive into the overall topic of, you know, how we can make birth in our culture better, could you go into what brought you to prenatal yoga, why you do it today, and also just kind of give a little bit of an overview about what it is?
Absolutely. That's a beautiful introduction to it. So I actually grew up doing yoga since I can remember. My mom practiced and I would like light the incense and fairy fly around the house with it. And so I've always been doing yoga, but I grew up dancing. And ballet, if you think about it, it's really holding poses. A lot of differences, let me just say, you know, like holding your breath. Nope, we don't hold our breath in yoga. But so I had that inner discipline, which yoga is truly quite a discipline. And I quickly fell in love with yoga when I stopped dancing because, you know, moving out at 18, dancing is quite pricey. And I found yoga instead. And then I just always knew that I wanted to teach prenatal yoga. So the first yoga teacher training I did was at Shivananda Yoga Ashram in Grass Valley, California. You know, come to find out, yogis don't even really like believe in having families, like they don't have sex. So like pregnancy is not really something that's exactly talked about. So again, I was like, dang, I'm gonna have to do another training. You know, this is why I'm here, is like the pregnancy part. I really just followed my own instructor and did whatever training she did, because you fall in love with your yoga teachers, basically. So when I didn't find that there, I was like, okay, I need to do my own thing. And I heard about Jane Austen, if she is the mama of all prenatal yoga, and she only lives 3 hours away from me. So she's a fantastic mentor. I reach out to her all the time, because as we are supporting people, we really need other people to support us and their language and the up and coming new things as well, to keep up with progressive language and inclusivity and learning from someone in the Bay Area. That also feels really good for me personally. So that's kind of how I found prenatal yoga. It's where I live. I'm in Truckee, California, Northern Lake Tahoe. I am, and I have been for 8 years, the only prenatal yoga in all of Reno, Tahoe. It is something that a lot of people don't want to dive into. They're pretty intimidated, which I very much understand.
Yeah.
They should be intimidated because it is such a I use vulnerable in a, I think vulnerability is a superpower, but it's such a special niche community that we really do have to be careful and aware, not because pregnant people are fragile, but because they are going through a lot that our culture just does not understand whatsoever. It's not our culture's fault. And I think birth workers really are doing that work to gently kind of turn that ship around. And we do that a lot in prenatal yoga as well.
Thank you very much for that. So to kind of get into our topic a little bit further, the topic of how do we make birth in our culture better? So I would like to start with kind of what's not working. Why does it need to be better? And like, of course, this is our opinion. But we can also, you know, kind of talk about some factual things of like what's going on. So I'll let you start. What is kind of not working or what's broken in our culture? And I'll also give a caveat of really being specific to the United States birth culture in this country, but feel free to deviate, but just to, for me to clarify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so much to unpack here. And we all have different perspectives, of course, especially we're limited to our own surroundings. I think there's an overarching level of fear in United States culture in general. But we look at, you know, birth as really something to fear, as something that's going to be traumatizing, traumatic. I think that is a big piece of what this culture is kind of focusing on and honing in on, rather than seeing all the other sides of it. Yes, it's okay to have fear, but it's what are we going to do with it? Fear can be motivating to learn something new, to get further support. So I think that's a big piece of kind of what's broken in our society, even just looking at pregnant people and what people say. I also think there's a huge lack of being able to hold space for people in general. So there's a lot of dismissive energy or dismissive ways of being of like, oh, that's normal, or, oh yeah, I felt that, you'll be fine. So when we talk about, you know, mortality and how it's pretty bad in a developed country, I think a lot of it has to do with that dismissiveness. So, you know, oh, that's normal, you'll be fine, could actually be something that needs to be further looked at. So, you know, a lot of people in our culture just share their own stories, which I think they're processing a lot of their own experience, but they're kind of processing all over pregnant people in a very scary fear way. Like if someone's listening to a birth story, the things that they usually hear are the times of deep challenge versus the times of success and celebration. Just being that type of culture of like excited about trauma and when stuff goes down. So a lot of people are, you know, not holding space very well for birth, sharing fears, stories, perceptions, assumptions. Kind of telling people what to do versus helping people listen to themselves. So I would love to learn more about birth in other cultures. The pandemic has made that very hard to do. So I think those are some of the pieces within such a huge, huge, vast world of what the issues are. And I would love to hear more from you about kind of what's coming up for you in that way.
Yeah. I definitely agree with everything that you just said, that it is very fear-based. and about, you know, what you had mentioned about, you know, sharing kind of the more challenging parts or even the traumatizing parts of birth and not emphasizing as much the triumphant parts of birth. I also wonder, this is completely my opinion and my just kind of general wondering, I wonder if that's tied to how we do not, as a culture in the United States, appreciate the role of a mother and the amount of work that a mom does, or even just a birthing person in general. And so I wonder if part of some people sharing the hardest parts of their labor and birth is in a way for them to seek validation about how hard it was. So to then, you know, shout from the rooftops, I work very hard. I do very hard work. And because our culture really just shrugs that to the side. So that's just, again, my opinion. And the other thing that is just a really big, huge red flag in our culture, in our culture, and how birth shows up and how we all show up for birth, really to me has to do with support during labor and birth. Lack thereof, the opinion of how it should go down, who typically is supporting birthing people, where birth happens, and the lack of support in people having choices on where they give birth. Like, it's a lot to unpack, like you said. So really to kind of, I'm only going to be able to skim the surface on this, but, you know, where people give birth, there is still a huge stigma around home births and it being viewed as dangerous or a foolish choice. Instead of asking questions, being curious, kind of checking those lists of red flags and green flags, there are people that are more suited. I'll use that word. That's the first one that comes to mind. More suited for home birth from the perspective of, is their pregnancy low risk? Are there things at a hospital that would be more likely to be needed for a specific pregnancy and potential birth? And so really looking at individual care rather than just on the whole a giant perception of that's a bad idea. And then there's also the birth support. And so I still see this as a birth worker, and I have done this for 2 years, going on 2 years. You've done this for a decade, so much longer. So I'm curious about your opinion, but I still see very much a battle between like hospital birth workers, okay, OBGYNs and labor and delivery nurses versus doulas, mm-hmm. and even birth educators too. I see like this like fisticuffs kind of rhetoric being discussed in social media, on Instagram, in comment section on my TikTok videos, in podcast episodes. I mean, like, I see this. I see real people having opinions that are very writing the other side off, you know, oh, they're just a doula. They should keep their opinion to themselves. Like really, really disrespectful language. And on the other side, the OBGYN is just being selfish. And I'm hearing a lot of these very harsh opinions, and I'm like, I don't think that's helpful to the people that are giving birth. It wasn't helpful to me when I was one of the people giving birth both times, and it felt very divisive. And there is a gray area, and there's also an area for harmony. There's an area for we can be a birth team.
I see. I just wrote that
smiling
down.
That you wrote. I love that. Well, then I'm gonna end my opinion and pass the mic to you to
talk
about the harmony, because I think there is an opportunity for that, and I see it. Yeah. I see that too. Thankfully, I see the harmony also happening. But overall, I don't often see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love it, Amanda. And I just love your fire. And that's the thing about birth workers in general. Like, we are so fired up and we're so passionate. And I think when we do come into birth, there's all these different birth workers, hospitals, staff, practitioners, providers, even midwives who are so passionate and kind of in their maybe a little bit of this like egocentricness of I know the best or I'm mostly trained. And it's like, let's look at the birthers. They are the experts. They are the ones who we are catering to. But yeah, I just wrote that down of harmony, because birth is everything, right? It's not just a medical event. It's not just physical. It is everything. It's all encompassing. It's spiritual, mental, physical, medical at times, and also energetic. The energy of the support. And I love that you also shared that's an issue in our culture, because I fully agree. That word also came to me of like, just supporting people, right? And giving them unconditional support, unconditional love, check-ins. Parents need more. They just need more. It's not, you know, living these nuclear families. It's awesome and it's great in its own way, but it's just not enough. And it's also not enough for like birthers and the doula. We need, you know, that community support. And again, pandemic has made that even more, I guess, creative, because now we can, you know, social media has blown up. Zoom is a great option, podcasts, things like that. So I'm glad to see that. But really, there is a very big gap between birth supporters. Even some doulas, you know, can't work with each other or can't appreciate the differences. We see this all the time, especially in Facebook groups. If we bridged the gap between all the providers, the families would succeed. I mean, imagine if we were to go home from a birth as a doula and the nurse called us and said, hey, how is your client doing? Which I know is against the law because it's HIPAA, it goes against HIPAA. However, what if we were going, oh, you know, she's having this issue, blah, blah, blah. And then, or they're doing really great. Then all of the providers and all of the support are on the same, at least a similar page or in the same book. And it just gives better care, you know? But to demonize each other is just not helpful. I think there is such a big lack of education with everybody, actually. But if I were to say, because I work in hospitals primarily, home birth is not as popular as you would think in a mountain town. But I see this often with the one OBGYN in particular I can think of is like, oh, you don't need a doula. If your partner's not going to do anything, then you need one. And I'm like, wow, I personally just think it's not her fault, or it's not their fault. It is lack of education. I'm like, do you know what a doula actually is and does? I don't think so. And I think that's the bottom line is just a lack of education and awareness. And it's like, talk to us. And I want to talk to you. How can I help you to help the client, to help the patients? You know, it's like we could all work together. And I know that's a bit of a fantasy mind, kind of idealistic, but
sure,
why not?
Yeah, why not shoot for that? Yeah. You know, go for it. And if it falls a little bit short, then it would be better than what it is. And, you know, that is this topic. That's what we're talking about. And so those are some of kind of to touch on the side of like what's not working, right?
Yeah.
And again, that was very high level. We really skimmed the surface. So then to flip things to more of a solution focused dialogue, what could help to make things better, right? And so, you know, we can kind of start on the flip side of what we were just talking about of support and education. So there is education for both providers and for parents. And I think that is something that could absolutely make things better to your point. So educating OBGYNs and midwives about what the role of the doula is and what the role of a birth educator is as well. And then on the flip side, educating doulas and birth educators about what the roles are for an OBGYN, for a midwife, for a labor and delivery nurse, so that there's more of that marrying of the education about the physiological and mind, body, spirit aspects of birth with medical, with what happens when and what are the roles in. And I think that would go a long way. And also it would help providers like medical providers, clinicians, encourage parents to seek out education, because that is another thing that I see a lack in. And so to, again, be more solution focused, I think it would be so helpful if more OBGYNs, because I'm not going to say all or nothing. It's not black and white. I know there are OBGYNs out there and midwives out there that encourage patients to take a childbirth education class. And they absolutely recommend that. And wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it make things better if more providers encouraged parents to take a childbirth education class, learn some type of education about, you know, the end of pregnancy, all of pregnancy, childbirth, the physiological aspects of birth, getting in touch with their body. And what I have noticed is sometimes there's rhetoric of, you don't have to worry about all that. I'll just tell you what to do. And I'm very much oversimplifying by saying that, but I just to summarize, like that is what I am seeing. And so I think it would make things better so that people could be empowered to know, oh, this is my body. And just like I know when I have a tummy ache, or just like I know when my wrist is hurting and I should make an appointment to see someone about that, that they can tune into their body and have a little bit of knowledge about the natural, normal progression in pregnancy and birth, and then be able to partner with their provider about being the expert on themselves and their baby, because they have been carrying that baby for many, many months. They show up as the expert of their body and their baby, and they then bring that energy to match the expertise of the provider from a medical perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I think that would be very powerful and empowering. I know that a lot of childbirth classes don't even teach things like pain coping practices, and that always makes me wonder, like, I wonder why, because it's okay. You don't have to learn about that. There's drugs to help you with that. So to really conversate, what type of birth do you want to have? What's your ideal birth vision? What do you need? What do you and your partner need? Because you will find those little nuggets deep within yourself by being asked. And we're not really asking people, we're just telling them. So to open up that conversation, to make it their unique process. And that's where such a nice segue into like what it is to form practice, just like yoga practice or pain coping practices. Like practice is just practice. It becomes your own. And the way you give birth is the way you are in life. You know, so we know more about ourselves in birth than we are told. And right now what I'm seeing is a lot of like, this is the way. This is, if you want this kind of birth, you need to take this class.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, what if meditation doesn't work for you?
Right.
You know, exactly. Or what if singing doesn't work for you? What if massage, what if... That's a kind of what I was thinking of, but I've seen it work for a lot of people. But all I'm saying is like, I've been to births where the mom was like, turn that meditation off. I'm going to freak out.
Exactly. And like, there is nothing wrong with that because to your point, it works for some people. And also to your point, it doesn't. And like, let's give parents the information about what to do to pivot. And on the flip side, just like when you said, you know, there's birth classes that don't talk about pain coping practices at all, because there are drugs to help. I wish, and I think it would make birth better, if those types of classes or hospitals or doctor's practices, whoever is providing this information or saying that sentiment, I wish they would also say epidurals are not 100% effective. The drugs are not 100% effective. There may be a small chance, not to add fear, but just to let you know, inform you.
Yeah.
If they're not always effective, mm-hmm. or there are, you know, pros and cons. What are the pros and cons to everything? Because if you put all your eggs in an epidural basket and then it doesn't work, or, you know, it only works for half your body, or you have to get redosed, or it falls out. I mean, the different things can happen. And a lot of those things that I just kind of spouted off are very rare. But if you're the one that experiences that rarity, how do you then cope, right? What other tools do you have in your pain coping toolkit?
Yeah.
Do you have none, or do you have some? And it's like, what's the next best thing? So to me, that just hits on a huge part of what could make birth better. And also, not having these polarizing, or not polarizing, more like these camps of different types of classes, but rather saying like, you know, here's a methodology that we're going to teach you, and also here are some other options too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with that tool belt, like packing in your tool belt so you can have those, because I think as, you know, I can also go back to Pam England with Birthing From Within. She's like, my role is to lessen trauma in our birth culture. And if I think about, I guess, myself and doulas at large, it's to really help make birth better, but also to help soften the intensity, you know, to help people get through it with more ease and peace and joy. And I think that comes from, there's a balance between telling the truth, right? That, like, just like you were so beautifully saying about the reality of epidurals, telling the truth, and then also, because sometimes the truth can have some fear in it, and then also just saying, you know, what could happen, telling the truth, but also reminding people, I guess, I don't know where I was going with that exactly, but there's a balance between telling the truth and not scaring people at the same time, because as many people as there are giving birth, that's how many births, unique births that can happen. So it's going to be completely different every single time, but to have those, the tools in your tool belt, and the questions in your tool belt, which is also a tool as well to help you along the way. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that I think, in my opinion, would make birth better in general in our culture is encouraging not just birth support teams during the labor process, but care support teams, like perinatal care support teams, that would help a birthing person span from their pregnancy through baby's first year of life, of incorporating like an ideal, right? If we're being idealistic here, incorporating prenatal yoga. Like, of course I'm going to push that and give a shout out to that. But like, I mean, talking about the practice, right? That's why I love it so much. That is a great opportunity. Every time you show up on your mat, and it doesn't have to be in this huffing puffing, sweaty, like I'm there for a hard workout way. And it often isn't. It is showing up on the mat to practice, like mm-hmm. going into a different pose, or what is it like to hold this? Or what is it like to just kind of be curious about sensations in my body right now? I mean, like prenatal yoga is such a fantastic practice for birth preparation. However birth unfolds, however you choose to give birth, or where you choose to give birth, like it's just such a great practice opportunity. And then also incorporating, you know, support groups, other providers that support parents before baby arrives and after baby arrives. To me, that would make birth in our culture so much better. And then just the overall experience of people who are pregnant and have babies and that grow their families.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I think, you know, also what I see is parents obviously listen to everything that their midwife or doctor tells them. So if sometimes I get a mom coming in for the first time to prenatal yoga and she's like, oh, my OBGYN said this was good for me, so I'm going to do it. So they have a lot of power, and it's really nice when they can honor and see and even experience for themselves how precious and supportive it really is. But I very much believe that everything starts with pregnancy and birth, that if we were to have better supported parents who were more cared for and loved, that they would have a better experience of birth and postpartum and the early days to parenting. And then they would be probably more happier and healthier showing that to their children. And then we have happier, healthier humanity. I really think it all starts with pregnancy and birth. So to look at the root of society and culture, to me, is birth. And everyone needs something different. So if we had a whole, choice of who we're working with, that's very empowering. And also in our culture, we have a lot of strong feelings about our own family. Wink, wink. So what I get a lot, especially living in Lake Tahoe, everybody moved away from their family. They don't have any family here. And they like that. However, you know, when they start to have babies, they're like, oh my God, kind of on my own. So to think about other people a little bit more of like, my neighbor just had a baby. Maybe I should go stop by and, you know, do the dishes that are piled up in the sink. Like to just think a little bit more about the people living next to us and the people around us, and honestly, near and far, you know, quick check-ins. But if we could think a bit more, as it's like a, I don't know, like an ecosystem of itself to help other people, and, you know, mother helpers, like thinking about neighbors, colleagues, I don't know, like high school kids that are around you, like these mama helpers, these family helpers. And also, I very much believe what could help our culture is considering the partner a whole lot more, what they're going through. I still see it. And I'm 32, and I see it in my culture a lot, that it's like we are seeing a very big difference between what our parents did and then now what we're doing. Partners are being asked to step up more than ever. And it's a lot. And it's a lot of pressure. And and it's good. It's very needed, don't get me wrong. But it's also very kind of shocking, because those partners did not grow up seeing that, most likely.
Right. So it might not be equipped.
Yeah, it's still a bit of a sticky area, that vulnerability and accepting help. And I wonder also what you think, Amanda, about this concept of accepting help, because I also have not had a baby. So I want to be sensitive to that fact that I don't exactly know how I will feel in the moment. But whenever I, you know, try to introduce concepts of not only asking for help, but accepting it, you know, people roll their eyes, they scoff, they, it's so hard for me to ask for help. And I just don't quite understand that within my body. It doesn't really like resonate with me, but also I haven't lived it. So I'm sensitive to that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's so important, just to be curious and be sensitive to it and just kind of like take that in of like, I'm noticing people are scoffing or they have resistance. And I think that, you know, it's so individualized, and it's also this push pull. It's like, when just from my own lived experience, like I definitely had the feeling of like, I want help. I want people to offer to help. And some did, and I appreciated it. But then there was also this pushing away of, but I should be able to do it myself, or it would be too difficult to accept the help because the help would come with so many strings and just cords attached to them. Yeah. I still get lost in the mire of that at times, just in where I am on my parenting journey of having a 3 and 5 year old, of like, I would love help, but there's major strings attached to it with particular people. And then the pandemic that just made a whole web of strings, of course, attached to that. So, but I think there is something to it. And I think that goes back to our culture being very individualistic, not having that village model that we hear about, and it just becomes a joke. And that's one of the reasons why I show up every week and do this here on the podcast and in other, you know, content creation type ways of just talking about, the village model does not exist. So like, how do we put it together ourselves and like find what we need, to create something that works for us and to make it just a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love hearing about your own experience. And I think this education piece, we're not really told like, oh, I'm not supposed to do it on my own, or all the changes that a new family is going through. And then going back to conversations as well, it's like the theme of this conversation so far is like education conversation. Yes. Because
exactly.
During pregnancy, you can get your people together and say, I recommend this to my doula clients because there's so many expectations during when a new baby's born. You know, your own parents have their expectations, and we, the birthers, might not even be aware of what those are. So I suggest having conversations during pregnancy, saying, "Hey guys, how you doing? We're wondering what your expectations are. What do you plan?" Yeah. And then, these are our expectations.
Or yeah, and taking time to process like the offering that's on the table of help from a mom or a mother-in-law, and then think about, does that sit well with me? Mm-hmm. Is that something that I'm into? Or is there an aspect of it that I'm not so much into? And just sitting with it. And then also part of that education piece and conversation, but this is more of an internal conversation, is when you educate and say, here are all the options, whether it be in labor and birth, here are the options for pain management, for if something comes up, you know, whatever it is. After baby's born, here are the options for how people can help. Because you just have to start with there of like, how do people, what do I even need help
with?
What
do people do? Yeah.
What, mm-hmm. what would someone help me with? Like, what's even, I've never done this before. You know, just kind of knowing what the options are, and then sitting there and having a conversation with yourself of like, mm-hmm. what am I into? Like, I do not want anybody washing my underwear. I'm so not into that. But towels and baby clothes, great. So then I could specifically write down, if someone offers me help and they're going to come over, can you please wash, dry, and fold a load of towels, baby clothes? Like, have very specifics, and then you know what you're comfortable with. You have it written down for yourself and can pass it on to others.
Absolutely. Yes. And your people want to help and they don't know how, and it's not their fault. They literally do not know how. And everybody has different strengths. You know, someone might be really good at baby stuff and they can hold the babe for an hour, or they might be really good at making you laugh. Like, it also doesn't have to be hands-on caregiving in home. Or maybe they're really good at having conversations with partner and checking in on them, you know? So everyone, it's like, let's help set our people up, set our support up for success so they can set us up for success. And it doesn't have to be like for the whole first year. It could be 6 weeks. It could be 12 weeks. It's whatever the birthers want, you know? It's like, what do you want? And if you don't know, that's okay. You set it up. You can cancel it. All good. The way you set yourself up in pregnancy for postpartum, so influential. And again, you can always cancel it. You can have something on your fridge, you know, of like, this is who you call at 3 a.m. Or I have had partners reach out to me, like, I didn't know who else to call. She doesn't want to talk to anybody. I'm like, got it. Noted. Let's, you know, figure this out, kind of thing. Yeah. I love these these solutions. And I know that we are very slowly doing it, but it's really fun to be a part of that. And yeah, that village.
I know.
I love that. I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Well, thank you so much for just sharing your knowledge, your expertise, your passion with us on this topic. And if anybody who has been listening is interested in finding out more about you or following you, where can they do so?
Yeah. So a wonderful way is obviously Instagram. It's marissa.mignoni.doula. And you can probably find the exact how to write my name in the show notes. Yeah?
Yes. Absolutely.
And then my website is a wonderful way to connect with me as well, see what I'm up to, offerings that are going on. That is mountainblessingsbirth.com. And then you can also sign up for a guided meditation there. Once you get the guided meditation, you'll be connected to the newsletter. And then that's also a really good way of just staying connected and up to date. I think those are the best ways.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. And I'm absolutely going to link to all of those in the show notes of this episode.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amanda. And thank you for having this podcast. I absolutely love the title, the concept, the what you're doing here. And it was great to have a conversation, especially with another fellow birthing from within worker.
Yes.
So nice to just have that mutual understanding and language and all of that. So thank you. And listeners, I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what landed the most for you. So
please feel free to send us a message.
Please do. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the show today. If you liked the episode and would like to hear more, please follow Finding Your Village wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to use the code FYVPODCAST to sign up for the postpartum class at pregnancytopreschool.net to save 15% today. Thank you so much, and stay safe, healthy, and connected.